Hey, everybody, welcome back. Do you have ADHD and afraid to start up a new business or afraid to enter into a new job or just afraid of failure? Well, my next guest, Rob Kurchek, is a very successful ADHDer who's opened up many businesses, things from You Fix It to a health club to now a Human First, where his mission is to help companies go back to a four-day work week and help families deal with putting the technology down and being a family again. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today, I'm joined with Rob Kurchek. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Yeah, thank you so much, Reed. Really appreciate the opportunity and really grateful to be here today.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and we'll go on with the questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in a small town of 2,500 in Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I have two really caring parents and a sister who's 2 years younger than me, who has a 1 year old. And then my wife, Nikki, and I got married last October, and we're actually expecting a kid as well this January, our first kid. So we are I'm a little bit scared, you know, a little bit nervous, but also very excited. And I also,
one thing that's probably helpful for the listeners to understand is I do have ADHD, and I also believe, and I've never been diagnosed with, but I believe I have sensory processing disorder and have had that since I was a kid as well. And so I think that, that maybe that resonates with the listeners, and I definitely can understand some of what you're going through as somebody who might have autism or ADHD.
So do you remember the first business you started?
Oh yeah, totally. It was an Anytime Fitness health club. I opened that business I signed the paperwork in October of 2010, and then I opened the gym on January 21st of 2011. I'll never forget that first day. And I had pre-signed up 95 members with my club manager at the time as well. We both signed up 95 people. And the first person that came to the door for my first business ever, his name was Jeremy Rocker. And he came to the front door and he's like, "Hey, you know, I know you guys are open today. I want to get my key." And we gave him his key and he got in a workout. And that was like the first time that it was a real, you know, it was like a real business that I had started and that I, you know, was actually generating revenue. It was really cool.
Now, what would you say would be the hardest thing of having ADHD and running a business?
Well, I should also probably clarify. So I guess I'm a serial entrepreneur, and I ended up owning 3 Anytime Fitness health clubs, 4 You Break, I Fix cell phone repair stores, a tech startup, and then my current consultancy, Humans First. And so that's 9 companies in about the same number of years. And so what I want to show people is that even though you have ADHD, it is absolutely and it possible to be a successful entrepreneur. And in fact, I would almost argue you are or could become more successful than the average person because you have ADHD, because you have it. And so what ADHD does for me as an entrepreneur is it forces me to take action and do things that I wouldn't otherwise do. And now I do admit that it's very challenging to learn how to operate a company and become organized. And so it's interesting you asked this question, because my newest consultancy, Humans First, the mission for my company is to help humanity understand how technology impacts mental health, relationships, and productivity at work. And the reason that I want to help people with that is I was seeing that as an entrepreneur, I was doing all these things and I felt like I was really busy. But at the end of the day, I couldn't write a list down of many of the things that I accomplished because I didn't actually accomplish a lot. I was getting super distracted all the time with my ADHD. And so what I've learned is how I can use technology in ways that serves me well and kind of act as like digital guidelines or digital bumpers to help me be more focused instead of distract me or take away from my focus.
Mm-hmm. Now, what advice would you give to someone who wants to start out their own company, but either has ADHD or ASD or sensory processing disorder?
Yeah, I think starting a business has to be a good balance between research and action. And so if you think of it as a continuum, right? Like I could sit here on one end of the continuum is research, where I could literally research something for 10 years and try to find the perfect business idea. Or I could also research something zero and just take action and start tomorrow, right? The ideal business is probably somewhere in the middle, where you've researched something and for some amount of time, let's say it's maybe 6 months to a year, and then you start to take action and bring that idea to life and do a series of small experiments. And then depending on how successful those experiments are, you reiterate, and do a different experiment and try to make it more successful. My problem is that sometimes I wait too long and research things and take too long to find the perfect idea, when I just need to do more stuff and take more action in the near term.
All right. Now, out of all your companies you've started up, do you have one that you would say was more enjoyable than the others?
I mean, that's kind of like saying, you know, which of your kids is your favorite, you know? I don't have kids yet, but here's the way I would look at it. I am so excited about my current company, Humans First. I actually sold all my other businesses so that I could focus on Humans First. And the reason is there are 4.2 billion people connected to the internet today. I know that if every one of those people knew what I know about how technology impacts mental health, relationships, and productivity at work, the entire world would be a completely different place. There would be so much more joy and happiness and connection between people, and we would just live a better life. And that's why I'm really motivated to share this information with people.
All right. What was the one thing that drives you to go after your dreams?
You know, I don't want to be on my deathbed and have any regrets. I don't want to wonder what if, you know. I don't want to be in my deathbed and wonder, well, what if I had opened up that Anytime Fitness, or what if I had traveled around the world, or what if I had tried to get my CFA charter holder? What if I had approached that woman that ended up being my wife? You know, like, I don't want to have to wonder about any of those things on my deathbed. And so, you know, what research shows, it's interesting, is research shows that people in general, humans in general, regret far more things in life that they didn't do instead of the things that they did. And so I don't want to leave anything on the table when I'm on my deathbed. I want to experience everything life has to offer and have no regrets at the end.
So why don't you tell me a little bit more about Human First? How did you come up with it? How did you come up with the name, and so on and so forth?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is, I think that people are aware that we're obviously using technology a lot, but here's the statistic that really helped me name the company. And this is a statistic that was from before COVID. So you can't say, oh, like it was the impact of COVID that led to this. That's not true. So in America, the average person spends 12 hours and 21 minutes a day in front of screens and media. Put it another way, we spend 3/4 of our waking lives 7 days a week in front of screens and media. But the thing is that the thing that brings the most joy and happiness and meaning and purpose in life is connecting with the hearts and souls of other people. And so, you know, we're spending 3/4 of our lives in front of something that is not natural. Screens aren't in nature. They don't exist in nature. They're man-made. And so the name of my company, Humans First, is a reminder to people that we are here to connect with other people and be with them and share moments with them and use technology maybe a little bit less in our lives.
So would you say that technology is kind of disconnecting us from our lives?
So, and I just want to be clear, right? Like I'm a nerd. I built my first computer from scratch in middle school, right? I love technology. I think it's amazing. It does amazing things for humanity. But the way I describe myself is that I'm not anti-technology. I'm pro-humanity. And so I do believe that there is a ton of different ways that technology is negatively impacting our relationships, our communities, and our families. And that's why I call this area of study that I'm talking about technology mindfulness. It's not just productivity and it's not just awareness. It's using tech. So technology mindfulness to me is using technology in a way that makes your life easier, not harder.
All right. What would you account for your success?
I am a stubborn mother effer. Like I am very, very stubborn and very gritty. If I want something, I will not stop until I get that thing. I just won't stop. And I believe that that is, you know, there's a lot of studies that show that this grit, right, which is a kind of a combination of passion and perseverance, that grit is the number one factor that determines what makes an entrepreneur successful. And there's many, 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 many times in the last 4 years when I was working on Humans First that I wanted to quit or I wanted to stop or it didn't seem like I was making a difference or that I could figure out the business model. But I now understand what the business model is and how I can help people. And it's very motivating to me. Very excited about it.
Now, how is Humans First doing today?
Yeah. So what I'm doing with Humans First is I help teams, individuals, and entire companies with their technology mindfulness. Highest level offering is I serve as an advisor and a guide to companies who officially want to transition from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week with no loss in productivity or profitability. And so I help companies facilitate that entire transition and give every single person in the company back, including the management team, an entire day of time, which to me is so meaningful. Like that is one of the most incredible things that I could give people is the gift of time. Imagine what you could do with an entire day of time back per week. How much time could you spend with your family? Or could you be traveling? Or could you be exercising? Or even just relaxing and just doing the things you love? That to me is very meaningful. And I want to give people that.
Now, how do you go about doing that? Because, I mean, I remember one of my first jobs, I was working at an ISP and I started out working a 4-day, 10-hour work week.
Yeah.
And that was exhausting because, I mean, when you're working an ISP, you're at 24/7. So I'd work from I'd be coming home at 12 o'clock at night, coming from downtown, and my parents didn't want anything about that because they knew it was just coming home at the worst times, leaving the Howard L station.
Yeah. 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 Well, can you repeat the question one more time? I just want to make sure that I'm answering correctly.
How do you go about transitioning to the four-day work week?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the answer is somewhat complicated, right? I mean, I could tell you in a couple of sentences, but basically, here's what's happening to today's world with white collar workers. The average white collar worker sends and receives 126 emails per day. And so if you think to yourself, okay, well there, that's about, if you take 2 minutes on average per email, that's not a lot of time. Then on average, the average white collar worker is spending 4 hours per day on email. Just on email alone. Then let's say they spend about 2 hours in meetings, right? That's pretty normal. Some people even spend more. Then you only have 2 hours left in an 8-hour day after your meetings and email to actually like do the work that you're supposed to be doing, like do your job, which is, I mean, who can do their job in 2 hours? Like no one, right? Or not many people. That's very challenging. And so all of my, the entire system that I have for Humans First and transitioning a company to a 4-day week is to eliminate a lot of the BS low value stuff that people do, eliminate distractions and help them focus on what matters most. And, you know, so think about it. If I can even just cut down your email volume in half, I'm not saying eliminate email. I'm just saying I cut your email in half. That saves you over a day per week right there of time.
Because in a given day, an average person is dealing with at least, 100 emails to 200 emails a day, and it's either answering, deleting, and it's, so I'm guessing you, what you practically tell them to do is, listen, you don't have to answer all your emails in one day. You can put half away for the next day and answer them.
Yeah, and that's certainly one way to accomplish it. But the other thing is it's really thinking critically about communicating and how you can communicate differently and more effectively. Because what I see happening is a lot of people today are using email for things that should be a conversation, right? Like, for instance, they trade 10 emails back and forth about something, but they could have just had a 60-second conversation and accomplished the same amount of, came to the same conclusion. But when you add up all the time that both people spent trading 10 emails back and forth, it's 15 or 20 minutes when it could have just been a 60-second conversation. So like, if you do that a handful of times per week, you're saving hours and hours of time right there.
So basically, if you probably tell them, if you have anything simple to tell another employee, don't email it. Just pick up your phone and call them and say, hey, answer this question.
And so that's a great suggestion, Reed. And that is one of the types of suggestions that I would make. Absolutely.
All right. Where do you get your inspiration from?
It's a really good question. I would say my inspiration's from my parents and my wife. My wife, really helps me, inspires me to be more empathetic and to understand other people's viewpoint more. My parents have really inspired me to work hard and care a lot about other people. And they've served such a good role model for me that I'm really grateful for them and how much support that they've given me throughout my life.
All right. Now, on any given day, how do you deal with your ADHD while you're working? And because I know you, the best quote that I've heard about ADHD is, we're like, have a Ferrari engine with bicycle brakes, from Dr. Yes. Ned Hallowell. We're constantly on the move. Our mind is constantly going.
Yes.
How do you deal with the constant thoughts that pop into your head at any given time?
I absolutely love that quote too. I tell that to people very often. You have a Ferrari of a mind, and I just need to help you learn how to apply the brakes. I love it. So that is the answer to that question, is literally everything that I show people with humans first. But the main thing is, there's ways that you can use technology to help you focus instead of making you not focus. So here's a couple examples. One of the things that I have found super helpful is for me to block off time in my calendar to focus, right? And so every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., repeating infinitely, I have a block of time in my calendar that says GSD, which stands for get shit done. And so during that time, right, here's what I don't do. I do not, during 8 to 11 a.m., check my email. I do not check my email. I do not make appointments. I do not take phone calls. I try not to check my phone. I try to do everything humanly possible to just focus on whatever is the most important one or two things for that day. And then even if the rest of my day goes to crap and I don't get anything done, I've at least still accomplished the most important thing, and the day is a win. It's amazing. And so another kind of like hack related to that is that on my phone, I have set it so that every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. automatically, it turns onto a focus or do not disturb mode. So now if I pick up my phone at 10:15 a.m., it looks dark. It's in do not disturb. And it's a signal to me to not be on my phone and be focusing. And so I've set up all these kind of digital bumpers in order to help me. And they, again, it doesn't mean that I couldn't override them. Of course I could, but it really is a big reminder, oh yeah, you shouldn't be on your phone right now. Don't be checking your text messages or whatever. Does that make sense?
What do you say to somebody who says they have ADHD, but they're just afraid to venture out and try their own business, or who's just scared of failure?
Yeah. Well, I hate to break it to you, but there's always going to be a fear of failure, right? Here's the thing is, there's actually a fear of failure even if you don't start a business. You know why? Because you could get fired from your job, and that's a failure. And so if you reframe it to yourself to think that there's always a chance that you're going to fail, even if you, let's say, started a nonprofit that's not even for profit, but it doesn't work, that could also be a failure. And so there's failure at every single thing that you can do in life, whether it's you're an entrepreneur or not. And so if you start to realize, oh, like there's always this failure and that's never going to go away. That's never, even if I was a billionaire, but I started a company, that doesn't guarantee that it's going to be successful. It could easily fail. And so if you think about failure as something that isn't meant to be avoided, but actually embraced, and you have an attitude like this, and this is the attitude that I have, I'm either winning or I'm learning. I'm either winning or I'm learning. And so if I fail, it's not really failing, it's learning. And once I adopted that viewpoint, either I'm winning or I'm learning, it really changed a lot for me.
Now, how is your regular day going with your ADHD? Do you find yourself getting distracted during your just normal day routine?
Totally. I mean, but that's why I'm so... Over the last 4 years, I've run many, many, many hundreds of experiments on myself in order to figure out how I could use technology in the way that serves me best. And so I've tried like dozens of different ways of calendar time blocking, just that one thing, right? Like I've tried that dozens of different ways and I found the one that works for me. Do I still get distracted? Absolutely. Sometimes I'm finding myself researching vacuums and shit online when I should be, you know, working. And it's like, oh yeah, I shouldn't be doing that. But the point is that, and I don't think I'm ever going to completely eliminate distractions because that's not realistic, but I am way, way, way less distracted than I used to be. Like, let's say if when I didn't, you know, I wasn't regulated, I was 100% distracted. I'm like 10 to 20% distracted now. Is that zero? No. Is it ever going to be zero? Probably not. But like, I'm so much more focused that I can accomplish a ton of stuff. And that is really like, is a huge, very meaningful change in my life.
Now you say you were regulated. Does that mean you're on medicine?
No, I'm not. I generally take like, I shouldn't say no, but I only take like Adderall once a week, one day a week, you know, because the other thing is I'm really obsessed with like a lot of data. And I actually, because I wanted to be my own experiment, I wore 4 fitness trackers for 4 months. To track all the data, I wore 2 Aura rings and 2 Whoops. And I wore all these fitness trackers for 4 months just to see, you know, to compare the data. And what I found, and I do think that that people need to know this is very important. What I found is that no matter what kind of Adderall I took, whether it was instant release or like a longer acting Vyvanse, no matter what time of the day I took it, no matter what I took, the dose I took, even if it was a low dose, it negatively impacted my sleep and my recovery, no matter what. And so I only, you know, want to take it once or maybe 2 days a week at most, because I know that the trade-off is that, yes, I'm productive during the day and I for sure focus better, but the trade-off is that I don't sleep nearly as well, no matter what I do. And that has a negative impact on me the following day.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you there. I mean, when I got, after my trial, clinical trial of the medicine, the therapist became my therapist and he prescribed me Adderall. I started out at 5 and I'm like, I can't take this. It makes my heart race like a mile a minute. I tried half and that still made me more aggressive. I was getting into arguments with my mother. So I went dial. He's like, okay, let's dial it down even more. I'm like, can you really do that? He's like, yeah, you can go down to 1/4. And 1/4 is what I'm on every day. And I do notice that it does impact my sleep, but with the mixture of CBD after the cool down, it kind of helps mellow my mind out.
Okay. Yeah. And that's, I appreciate you for sharing that, Reed. And there has been points in my life where I experimented with THC or CBD to get to bed. And for me personally, I didn't like how I felt necessarily on those all the time, but I know a lot of people who take those at night to like calm their mind. And I think it can totally be beneficial. That's interesting that you found that works for you. And I think that's great. I just think the average person with ADHD who's taking Adderall has no idea that that medicine is absolutely negatively impacting your sleep, whether you realize it or not. It absolutely is. And if you're taking it, even, you know, if you're taking it for 5 days a week, I guarantee you it's impacting your sleep, which therefore impacts everything else in your life, because you know, sleep is like, you need it for everything, literally everything.
Now, have you learned anything from each business you've started?
What haven't I learned? I mean, I've learned, I made so many mistakes. I've really learned a ton. I guess if you could be more specific with the question, I'm happy to share. But I also, you know, I've phone screened over 2,000 employees for interviews and hired hundreds of people. And, you know, I own the businesses across 3 different states. And so I'm happy to share anything you'd like about those experiences.
What have you experienced? I mean, with opening your own business, was it nice being your own boss? Did you find it more hectic because of your ADHD, because you get distracted so often?
You know, I think that a lot of people think that ADHD is something that's negative. And I actually, I don't agree on the whole. Given if I had the choice to not have ADHD at all or have what I have, I would have it. I would keep it. And the reason is, I think that, yes, it makes me more distracted at times. But the other thing that people don't realize is that I think ADHD actually helps me really focus on the things that I really like. It makes me so hyper-focused on those things. Like, for instance, when I buy a business or open a business and I need it to succeed, I am so dialed in to making that freaking business succeed that I think that's one of the reasons why I've been successful.
Well, I mean, and that's a good thing you brought that up. I mean, one of the factors of ADHD and ASD is they both, the one thing they share in common is the hyper-focus.
Yes.
Hyper-focus, the creativity. Those are the two big things they share in common. That's why people don't know if they have ADHD or if they have ASD, because those two things are huge in both of them. If you have a hyper focus, you fixate on it and you just talk about it and spill all that information because it's something you love.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I
see that in you, Rob. I mean, talking about your businesses and human first, I see that passion in you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Reed. And, you know, I it's funny because, you know, I do have a lot of entrepreneurial ideas, which again, like that could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. But with Humans First, my wife and I met over 3 years ago and she said, Rob, you know, since I've met you, you've had tons of business ideas, like a lot of people with ADHD. But she said, the thing that you always come back to is Humans First. You always are talking about this. This never leaves your mind. And I said, I agree with you. And that's to me how I know that this is my, you know, this is my calling. Like, I didn't choose this. It chose me. And then that's why I'm really excited to work with people on it.
Now, how many clients do you have of this day with Humans First?
Yeah. So, I'll just say that that's depends on how you define a client, but I do work with people regularly, both on an individual level and teams and then entire companies. And, you know, I'm happy to just chat with people in general about this topic. And it's funny because, you know, some people are very open-minded to it and others are not, and that's totally okay. But I think that almost every person on earth could benefit from increasing their technology mindfulness or just having a little bit more awareness of how technology is impacting their life, because they're using it for 3/4 of their waking life. You know, it's so ingrained in every single thing that we do.
I mean, I hear you on that, because people don't realize the minute they turn on their phones, they're stuck to it almost a quarter of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can go outside right now, walk down the street, and I'll find someone looking at their phone, walking their dog, looking at their phone. And I'm thinking, would you pay more attention to your dog than your phone?
Yeah, right. I agree with you.
I mean, it's like, I don't remember if you remember several years back, there was that woman who fell into the water.
Yes.
into the water.
Stewart.
In the hotel. I think it was a hotel or a mall, because she wasn't looking where she was going. She was looking at her phone and she paid, and she tried to sue, and they said, you were at fault because you weren't paying attention to where you were looking.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and you know, I like your analogy of the dog walkers. And I think the unfortunate thing though, is that when you were, you can replace dog with humans, right? Like how many people are, excuse me, they're staring at their phones when they're at the dinner table, when they should be having a conversation and
yeah.
I mean, talking about their day.
I mean, that reminds me of, I mean, you see it on TV or you hear it in the radio or then print, the Modern Family sitting at a kitchen table during dinner, all of them staring at their phones or their tablets, playing games, and they're texting back and forth to each other instead of talking to each other. What we need in this day and age is families to say, dinner time, you put your phone away and you turn it off.
Yeah. And
you talk about your day.
Well, you know what's interesting, Reed, and I actually do work with families as well. And one of the things that I think most families haven't done is they haven't established a family mission or value statement. And when you have that, when you've established a family mission and value statement, now you can filter all your future decisions through those missions and values, right? And so, for instance, you know, you could say to your son, hey, Tyler, you know, I see that you're on your phone at the dinner table. Well, one of our family values is that we support and care for each other. And I'm trying to talk to you right now about something that I need support with, and you're on your phone. I'm not feeling supported. Would you mind changing what you're doing right now so that we could uphold our family value of being supportive to each other? And so like having that conversation with people can completely change the family dynamic. It could completely help people differently think about how they use their technology at the dinner table. And it just requires them to make a family mission and value statement.
Now, is this one of the things you talk about with the families, is how,
yeah,
how we can get our family back together as a unit,
instead, yes, of
everyone in their phone on their tablets.
Absolutely.
Sit there and talk about the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is absolutely what I do. I do. That's one of the services I offer, is I help families construct mission and value statements for their families. You know, I help them. I don't do it for them. I do it with them. It's a collaborative effort. We all do it together. And it's not just me and the parents. It's me, the parents, and the kids as well. We all work on that together, because if everyone goes through that process together, there'll be more buy-in from everyone. And then mm-hmm. there'll be more compliance with it in the future when we discuss it.
And what kind of success have you had with it?
Well, I think it's something that has been super successful. And again, it's really not something that's very difficult. It just takes a little bit of time and effort. But, you know, that's something that I could help a family with in several hours, right? It's not like it takes like a day. You take 2 to 3 hours where I'd meet with them in person and go through that process with them.
I mean, another thing, and I'm pretty sure you're aware of this, what families don't realize is that light from the cell phone or the tablet changes your time schedule in your head.
Yes, the circadian rhythm.
The circadian rhythm, that's the word I was looking for. The circadian rhythm, because it sees that light as daylight.
Yes.
And your mind thinks, oh, it's still daytime. And parents don't realize, by letting your kid use their tablet and dealing with it, you're screwing up with their sleep. Literally talked with a woman a while back who had a son who had ASD. I mean, I forget how long ago this was. And she's like, my son's having problems falling asleep. He's on his phone his tablet until God knows how late, until he falls asleep with it. What can I do? What can you help me with? I'm like, well, there is an app you can put on there, but you also need to set a time limit.
Yeah.
You need to install a blue light filter. What that will do is that will get rid of that one light that affects the circadian rhythm, but you also need to set a time limit. I know he's going to argue with you, but you need to explain to him that, listen, this, you're going to be exhausted by the time you wake up in the morning because you've been on your phone all day. You need to put it away, and you can use it for a certain set amount of time during the night. And then after that, you need to go to bed. And that's the rules. I'm saying, I'm your parent. This is what you got to do.
Yep. You know, one thing that it came from my research, and again, like this, I really thought about this deeply because I believe I do have sensory processing disorder. And this is very difficult to prove. And I want to be very sensitive about talking about this because I know I'm aware of the audience that I'm speaking to, but there is some data that can indicate that it is possible that the use of screens, especially in kids before the age of 5, it actually contributes to autism, like heavy use of screens. Like, and the reason, the thought process is this. So when you are born, when anybody is born, right, you have 3 times the amount of brain connections than when you're an adult. And as you get older, those brain connections get pruned away so that your brain uses less energy because your brain is very energy intensive. Well, what can happen is if you use a screen a lot as a very young kid, there are 3 things or stimuli that we pay attention to in nature: things that are bright, things that are moving, and things that are loud. And so a screen is all 3 of those things generally. And so when you're very young and you have this stimulus that's bright, moving, and loud, it tells your brain, hey, this is something important. Pay attention to this. And it's thought that it's possible that if your brain is being wired to pay more attention to a screen, it's being less wired to pay attention to other things like facial movements or facial expressions. Mm-hmm. And that potentially contributes to the development of autism. I'm not sure if you've heard that before or what you think of that, but again, this is very difficult to prove. This is not, you know, this is not like absolute certainty, but this is a theory that I've heard that I wanted to share with the listeners, because I am not sure if that, you know, might help people or if they're upset about that. I don't want to upset people, but I just thought it would be interesting for people to know that.
And now you said you have sensory processing disorder. Now, how do you deal with that? Like when you go into a loud place or at work, if it's loud, how do you deal with it? Do you wear earphones? Do you try to find a quiet place?
Yeah. So I actually like music a lot. I like a lot of music. And so I listen to EDM or house or electronic music. So like anything that has like a really good beat, you know? And so I actually find that when I'm doing not when I'm reading, because I can't, there's too many inputs then. Like I can't, you know, read the words and then like listen to the words in the song. Overload. Yeah, it's too much. But I do like listening to music that doesn't have words when I'm doing, you know, computer work that doesn't involve reading. Like for instance, if I'm making a spreadsheet, like if I'm making a financial model, I'll put on some good music and I like can jam out to that. And that it really helps me be actually more motivated and more focused, I believe. But you know, other things about the reason that I believe I had sensory processing disorder is when I was a kid, I would cut out all the seams out of my socks, like my socks on my feet. I would cut out the seams because they felt very uncomfortable to me, and I didn't like the way that they felt. And then I also would. I did have a very tough time reading people's facial expressions. Like it basically like didn't register for me until I was in my early 20s to like look at people's faces and read their facial expressions at all. Like in my whole life, like it didn't even enter my mind to do that, you know, like to look at people, like to register what was happening on people's faces. And I also a lot of things with texture of food. Like I don't like the texture of most cold food, like lettuce or things like that. And I like the texture of a lot of hot foods, like, you know, like a warm sandwich or something. And so like, I just put all these things together. And again, like I haven't been diagnosed, but I'm like, this kind of sounds a lot like sensory processing disorder, because of all these things that I'm observing about myself. Oh, and the other thing is, by the way, that I have a very good affinity to hear language and learn, like I learn Spanish. I speak fluent Spanish and I learn Spanish very easily. Despite me having ADHD, I can hear a word pronounced in another language, even if I don't speak that language. And I can like say it back to somebody with almost perfect pronunciation without me ever having heard the word before.
I hate to break it to you, but you don't have sensory processing disorder. Everything you mentioned, those are all autistic autism traits.
Possibly.
That's autism.
Okay.
I mean, I have some of the things you mentioned. I mean, I have like a heightened sense of smell.
Interesting.
Smells really trigger me, like cigarette smoke. Oh my God. The smell of pot.
Mm-hmm. So strong.
Oh my God. I gag like really bad. I have exceptional sense of hearing. I could be in a loud room and my mother's phone could ring in her purse and I can hear it.
Wow.
I've been told by two audiologists, because the first time I went, I found out I have tinnitus.
Me too.
Second time I went, these glasses were sitting wrong on my ear, and every so often would cause like a ding, like a little bell ringing, almost like a chain dingling.
Dingling.
And I went back and I went for the whole audiologist, the whole audio test and everything. And the doctor came to me and he's like, "You have exceptional hearing. You can hear every single sound that we've played for you." I'm like, he's like, "You know what tinnitus is?" I'm like, "No." He's like, "Tinnitus is that you have a little bit of loss in your hearing, and it's that gap between what you can hear and what you don't hear, and that's where the hum comes in."
So
you're hearing the loss. That's what the hum is. That's why it sounds like a disconnected wire.
He's interesting.
Like, "There's a tiny bit of a hearing loss, but you have exceptional hearing. But what you're hearing at hum, you hear it at night when it's quiet because there is no other noise going on. So you're hearing that little bit of loss."
That's so interesting. So is it common that a lot of people with Asperger's or autism have, or ASD have tinnitus?
That I don't know, but I do know those with ASD have problems with sleep, like insomnia.
You know, what's interesting is I guess I have to be somewhat careful about what I say, but I truly believe that psychedelic use can really help with a lot of the symptoms of both ADHD and possibly Asperger's or ASD, let's say.
Yeah, I understand that. I know somebody who, in my life coaching group, he uses, he smokes pot, probably to calm him and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, when I say psychedelics, I mean like psilocybin mushrooms or LSD, and those are being, they're in clinical trials for, actually, so one of them is in clinical trials for ADHD, as well as like depression, anxiety, and other things, PTSD. But I have, we'll just say, I believe that those substances can substantially help both ASD and ADHD people and make their symptoms, we'll just say, more tolerable and lessened, greatly reduced.
Yeah. I mean, it was a shock to my family when they found out I had ASD. The doctors didn't know what to put me on, so they put me on Strattera. They put me on Sylert. And all they knew was I had a learning disability.
Yeah.
And then later in life, he's got autism. So kind of things came together for them.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I say something wrong or say something to insult somebody, they know I'm not saying it. It's because I have no filter.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, I'm assuming that you understanding that you have ASD you know, makes like, it's probably like almost helpful in a way that it like makes a lot of things make more sense. Like life makes more sense. Like when I realized I had ADHD, I was like, oh my God, so many things make so much more sense. Like I actually felt kind of relieved, you know?
Now, how are you with memory with ADHD? Can you remember things? And because I know with ADHD, if you don't keep using that one thing, you forget it.
So what's interesting is I do really well when I write things down. And so when I, for instance, read a book, I will hand write with a pen and paper notes, not type. And my wife like gets annoyed because I'll spend a day reading a book and I'll be like, I want to talk to you about all these things that I just learned. And we'll talk for like, I mean, I'll just really be talking to her for like an hour. And, you know, I'm like regurgitating all this stuff from the book. And she's like, okay. Like we don't need to talk about this all night, but I just remember so much when I write it down, way more than when I hear things. And I think that most people are like that, but I think it's especially helpful for me. And then when I take my notes and and again, my wife makes fun of me because like I take notes on my notes. So like every 6 months or so, I will take a week and I will take all my notebooks from the last 6 months and take notes on those notes and summarize them. But that's how I remember everything over many years. Like I can remember all these random facts about stuff because I've just read it through a bunch of times. And so I don't think that that's necessarily a secret, but I do think that, you know, people have ADHD and they repeat things a little bit more. I think that it really helps move a lot of things in the long-term memory.
I believe so too, because I remember people saying that when you write something down, it becomes like muscle memory.
Yes.
Your mind remembers writing it, and then you see what you wrote, and then it registers it into your head. And the more you write, the more you remember.
Well, interestingly, so we were talking earlier about our brains being Ferraris and they just need to apply the brakes, right? What mm-hmm. I heard is when you handwrite things, you can remember up to 36% more information. But why is more important? The why is when you handwrite stuff, it slows down your brain and that allows it to better encode that information. And so writing stuff down is like your brain slowing things down, which is what someone with ADHD needs, and mm-hmm. then they can remember it more. So I think that's really why it helps me.
I mean, I remember when I went away to Oshkosh for school for special ed, and we had a meeting, we had a dinner where you met the teachers and the tutors and former students. And you get to talk with some of the former students. And one of them I was talking with, he's like, I'm going to tell you something. And he's like, listen, It takes a normal student an hour to process their work, it takes someone like us 2 hours.
Yeah.
1 hour to process it and 1 hour to understand what we just processed.
Wow. That's super interesting. That's super interesting to think about. Yeah. I mean, one of the most
interesting things was what the head of the department said. And that was, listen, I'm going to tell you something and it's going to scare you, but you're going to understand this is there is no workaround. You're going to live with it. You're going to die with it. You just need to figure out how to work with it together.
Well, and that's why I was saying earlier, if I had the choice to not have ADHD or have it, I would take that, because I do think that, you know, I love analyzing things. Like that was my job for 5 years as being a stock analyst. I analyze medical device and pharmaceutical companies. And so like, if someone just takes enough time to stop and think and analyze, like, how could I best use this in my life? And then you do that, you experiment and you do that, your life is so much better. It's incredible. And I just think a lot of people are scared to experiment, you know, but like, what's going to happen? The worst that's probably going to happen is you're right back to where you started and you're at the same place. But if you experiment and it goes well, I mean, your whole life has changed and it's so much better. And I just think that that's amazing.
I mean, I got a friend who's got severe ADHD, and I feel for him because he can't get on ADHD medicine because he's got POTS.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the doctors say, we can't give you anything any stimulus or even anti-stimulus because it'll still affect your heart. So
yeah,
he can't focus for a long period of time. So no, he can't hold jobs. And he doesn't know, he's all worried and stuff. And then I keep saying, listen, you got to find something you love and turn that into your job. And that's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. If you can't find work, make work and become your own boss.
Yeah. I think that's great advice, Reid. I do think it's, you know, life is just a series of events where you're trying to find out what you're really put on this earth for, you know, and then you'll be happiest when you truly find out what it is. And some people never find out, right? But some people find out right away. I feel like with Humans First, I found out what I'm here put on this earth to do.
Anyways, Rob, where can people find more about Humans First?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you could certainly check out my work at humansfirst.us. And then one other thing that I just wanted to offer the listeners, Reid, is a free 30-minute consultation with me, a free 30-minute call where we chat about your technology mindfulness. I can maybe give you a few pointers and we can talk a little bit about how I could help you. So all you need to do to redeem that free half an hour consultation with me is just email me. My email address is rob@humansfirst.us and just mention this podcast and then I'm happy to set up a half an hour call with you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for coming on the show and it's been a blast talking to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Reid. I'm super grateful for the opportunity and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You too.
The way things used to be, I'm no big fan of now. I must have some sweeter memories somewhere in the cloud. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Welcome to the new normal. Gonna miss all you used to be. Gonna miss all you had. Consigned to the dustbins of history like opinions from your dad. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Welcome to the new normal. Shout. Talk to the freaks, you can talk to just about anybody you happen to meet. It ain't what it was, and it is what it is.